I'm Greg Johnson. Welcome to Countercurrents Radio. My guest today is Rob Kievsky. Rob is back after a few months. So we've been going back and forth for a while about different ways that whites can become a more resilient and more powerful community, especially racially conscious white people. And so, Rob, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on, Greg.
One thing that I've been saying for a long time is that white nationalists want to save all of our people, and we believe that we represent the interests of all of our people. But a lot of our people don't want to hear it. They don't want to be saved. And so what's happening here is a kind of ethnogenesis, the birth of a new people, namely the white people who have a future, that's us, and the white people who don't have a future, that's the rest of them, who go along with the basically a culture and a political system that's rigged for white genocide. So the big question then becomes, how do white people who have a future actually reach out and take that future? And I've really enjoyed our conversations where, because you have lots of practical ideas about exactly how that's done. So why don't we just hear some of your more recent big ideas, and then I'll just jump in and we'll just have a conversation about it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, as we discussed before, I mean, the person, it probably boils down into a nutshell. If we want to win, white boys got to grow up learning math again. If you go to the state universities, you see all people from foreign countries in the departments of physics and engineering and chemistry. And you know, I mean, that right there is a sign that we're losing. If there's white guys in those departments again, then we will be winning. It's just that is just how it is. The neat phenomenon is what's really going on here, and I think it's it all starts with these moms that don't want to be bothered to raise their kid, and they stick the kid in front of the TV. 30 years later, the kid is still in the, you know, living in her basement, never left because she wouldn't do the work up front. You have to front load high investment parenting when they're young and make sure that they're gonna launch really well when they're 16, 17, 18. So many people have it backwards and they let the kid grow up a total idiot and then think that expensive college is gonna fix them. And that's it's just the opposite. You know, you gotta raise the kid to be really smart and self-sufficient and responsible for themselves from a young age and doing real things in the world, not watching TV, not watching video games. And by the time they're 18, it doesn't matter that they're going to do, you know, they're going to be successful almost no matter what. And they'll get into whatever college they want to go to, especially with their peers are so dumbed down. So the homeschooled kids are really already, I think, going to inherit the country. And we just want to be part of that wave. The Christian homeschoolers, I mean, they may very well come to us, come to our views, and, you know, and I think they really are on that way, but we should be also pushing that way and do what we can to make sure that especially the white boys that are growing up and will, you know, be going to college in 2030, 2035, 2040 will be, you know, at the top of the heap and ready to take over from all the, you know, a society that's absolutely falling apart. Yeah, and I mean, the Christian homeschoolers are already on the way. If you look at that, I think they're the ones right now who are poised to take over the idiocracy.
Right. Well, the neets really are sort of the proletariat of white nationalism, as I formulated it a few years back. The people who get college educations and then can't get jobs and end up stocking shelves at Trader Joe's or Whole Foods and spending a lot of time online being angry and wondering why they don't have a future. But isn't it the case that a lot of these people are being discriminated against? So, for instance, in the past, it was perfectly okay to be a unserious guy who did a lot of things like sports and so forth and, you know, community activities and all that kind of optional stuff that people are supposed to take to get on, you know, to get into college. And then they go through college and they're tomorrow's leaders and they find jobs. The thing that happened under the Obama recession, depression, the Obama economy, is when they came out, they weren't finding jobs.
Exactly. That was why Occupy Wall Street happened, because college kids were graduating and not getting paycheck liberal jobs, like had been happening all before. Up to about, 2008, if you were a good liberal, went to a nice Ivy League school, they found some kind of way for you to be a paycheck liberal, for you to join the middle class of liberals. And such a brutal irony that paycheck liberals, who don't accomplish anything of value and in fact harm the world, go out and get people fired who are doing useful jobs, who have skills and who are struggling to raise their family right. It's really like the paycheck liberals are like livestock, they're pets, they're taken care of. That whether or not they do a good job is irrelevant. Their job is just a sinecure. And the enemies that they attack are plumbers and electricians and rocket scientists at Lockheed Martin. You're going to see more and more of this. The guy who discovered DNA, Watson.
Right. Yeah, but I guess the Occupy people are the left-wing neets, and a lot of the alt-right are the right-wing neets. They ended up in the same boat, too. And so I do think it's not just a problem with the front-loading, but the fact that the economy has changed, the system has changed, and it especially has changed for white men. It's just not interested in co-opting them anymore, giving them jobs and making them responsible, boring citizens. And so it's got an insurrection on its hands. By the way, I just read a news story the other day that in Hungary, they're proposing shutting down gender studies as a major.
That's great news.
Yeah, and I just thought that was hilarious, because I guess there aren't any huge gender studies factories opening up, so they just don't need any gender studies advocates, right?
Right.
Gender studies degrees. So, but there are two problems here, it seems to me. One is upbringing, but the other thing is that the economy has changed, and even people who were slackers through high school and then went to college were getting jobs in the past, and now they're simply not getting them anymore. And so we've got to be more competitive.
If you go to Indeed.com and do a search on electronics technician in a major city, thousands of jobs come up, robotics and automation. It's the H-1B visa, bug men are getting a lot of those jobs, but a lot of them are just unfilled because of the dumbing down.
So what are the areas where there are lots of jobs, and how can people get them? And even more importantly, I think, how can people get them without going to college? Because college is a giant waste of money and waste of time at this point.
Yeah.
And people who go to college graduate with enormous debts that they might be paying off for the rest of their lives. Whereas if people can not go to college, skip the brainwashing, skip the boredom, skip the debt, and go directly into high-paid jobs, they're so much further ahead. They have systematic advantages over everybody else who went the college route. So what are the jobs that people should be looking towards? If you're, say, 16, 17, 18, and you're listening to this and you're thinking about your future, your parents might be brain-dead zombies who think that you've just got to go to college and get a lot of debt, and that's the way to become middle class or upper middle class. They might be misleading you. The guidance counselors, your teachers, are probably misleading you. If you want to do well in life and avoid crippling yourself with debt and also wasting a lot of your time with political correctness, if there's a way that you can go directly from where you are now into a high paid job, I'm sure these guys would like to hear it. So,
yeah, I have the answer.
Good.
Okay. And it's what I'm doing at the Cleveland Institute of Electronics. It's study at home. The catch is you probably should make sure that you're at least through first year calculus, like AP calculus, AB. There's two AP calculuses, AB and BC. And if you can pass the AP AB test, even with a 3, you'll be good enough in math for it. So the caveat, it costs about $1,600. It's called Electronics Technology with Lab. And the caveat is that, you know, you might find it difficult. They send you a personal laboratory thing, like an electronics lab simulator thing, and soldering and making robots and stuff. And also you can get Arduino kits. Once you do the electronics technician, you'll have enough knowledge to get an Arduino kit and build it and, you know, fix cell phones. And YouTube has instructions on like Arduino projects, and there's books and stuff. And so it takes initiative, and it takes about as much STEM knowledge to pass first year calculus, which is not, you know, and I wouldn't risk doing it before, you know, you study math on your own for a while, you know, to get through just that first year calculus, just so you're ready for math problems. And when you're going through it and you're studying it, and if you don't understand something initially, you just keep torturing the data until it gives up the results. You know, you got to be kind of persistent. The more you do it, the better you get at it. You know, and if you don't learn something the first time, you don't say, oh, I'm a failure. You know, you go over it a second time, and eventually it becomes quite clear. People give up too easily. So that's where it's at. And if you're a certified electronics technician, on Indeed.com, there are quite a few jobs, and there's entry-level jobs. And one of the ones I'm looking at is being a tower tech, because you get paid a lot extra to climb up high in a tower. And I would frankly rather be climbing up towers than being in offices with cat ladies. So it's kind of like a Jack London type job where you travel around and climb towers, like the windmills and cell phone towers. I mean, that just looks like a lot of fun. And, you know, I'm in good physical condition, and I would get paid a premium for, you know, being in good shape and, you know, not being afraid to climb up high and have electronics. I mean, that will pay in the high five figures, closer to 100,000 than to 50. If you look at Indeed.com of those kind of jobs, and when you've been at it a couple years, they give you raises and stuff and you get better at it, and they send you to school for free, you know, to learn more stuff. So anyways, yeah. So that's what I would recommend would be the Cleveland Institute, as long as you have some math. And, you know, I'll help you. I'll tutor you via Skype, just like we're doing right now. And, you know, talk you through it. You can take a picture of the problem you're working on and text it to me, and I'll, you know, show you how it worked it out and text it back to you. It's really great. I mean, I get help that way myself. I mean, we can have our own Skype STEM universities, our Skype tech academies, you know, MIT online for us, you know, it's absolutely doable. But we need the motivation.
Yeah, and definitely we need the motivation. One of the things that happened a few years ago that made me really happy is I did a similar conversation with Patrick LeBrun, and a fellow who is a helicopter technician wrote in and left a comment at Countercurrents. And another Countercurrents reader, who was in sort of a dead-end job, decided that he was going to try out for that. And I haven't heard from him recently, but I think that he has now followed through on that and gotten a new job. And again, these are very well-paying jobs. There are a lot of, you know, there will always be oligarchs, unfortunately. The rich will always be with us. And
yep.
If you can fix their toys and keep their machines flying and things like that, you're going to be well paid and quite secure. And the dumbing down that we see going on is so pervasive.
Yes.
That there just aren't people who can do these jobs. And yeah, you can get these coolies coming in from the East. But a lot of these people actually don't know their stuff.
Right. No, they don't.
And they're there because they're cheap. And then they have white people who are not getting raises but are having their workloads doubled, forced to check their work and keep the whole thing afloat. It's not a sustainable system. And believe me, when helicopters start falling from the sky and airplanes start falling from the sky, there's going to be a screeching halt to that kind of affirmative action. Affirmative action is something for those people's jobs and those people's industries. But when it materially affects the ruling class, then suddenly they want meritocracy.
Right. Wait till Muhammad flies one of their G5 Gulfstream jets into the side of a mountain on purpose. That'll teach them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, those days are coming. And so we do need to recognize that if we position ourselves to get these, especially technical jobs, there's a huge shortage now of technical jobs, and also just tradesman jobs. I've been told that...
Right, and actually those are coming together. I mean, HVAC is automated. You know, if you're an HVAC technician, you can learn automation, or automation, you learn HVAC, and they kind of come in together. Tradesmen and high tech are how to say, amalgamating, you know? I mean, there's plenty of tradesmen who don't want to bother with that stuff and just want to, like, hang drywall and solder pipes. But, you know, the opportunity is there for a tradesman to go into robotics and automation systems, you know, to go into more complex systems. But I wanted to mention, I have a similar story. There was a kid he was at a prep school in Massachusetts, and his name was Nathan something. I remember he was on Amren, and he asked his school to name five things that are good about diversity. You can't include ethnic food or music. And so they all were hating on him, and I got in touch with him, and I said, what are you going to do for college? He said, I'm going to major in history, and I'm going to fight I'm going to argue with people. And I'm like, that's not going to get you anywhere. I said, you should go into petroleum engineering. And he did. He went to Alaska and University of Alaska and was majoring in petroleum engineering. Last time I emailed with him, he was a sophomore and he was doing all right at it. And that's a really well-paying job.
Good. Good, yeah. There are lots of examples of this. One thing that's really nice is we now know there are families with kids in our larger movement. A lot of them are small right now, the families and the kids, but both are growing.
That's great.
Yeah, so what would you advise people who are just beginning their family to do to help give their kids an edge, especially because the whole society is really stacked against white kids, especially if they sort of go towards the humanities, cat lady, SJW infested areas of society. And that basically means school, liberal arts college, bureaucracy, and stuff like that. What do you do to give your kid a way forward? You know, and help them avoid that.
Try to live within commuting distance of a major metro area if possible. And I'll explain why a little later. But the first thing, the Waldorf schools are very right about this one thing, is that you want to provide your children with a low stimulating, understimulated environments. So definitely no television, definitely no electronic anything. And inside the house, they don't believe in electric lights. You should have just natural light, the sun coming in. And the walls should be like wood-colored, natural-colored walls, no bright colors on the walls, a lot of outdoor activity, obviously, and just a lot of doing real stuff with your kids. I mean, if it was up to me, parents would not have to work. Their full-time job would be raising their kids and doing real things, you know, running through parks, climbing, going on climbing trails, you know, going fishing, a lot of that kind of stuff, a lot of sports. And as far as book learning, all the homeschoolers really need is 2-3 hours a day, first thing in the morning. You know, about first thing they should do when they wake up is like an hour of math between you and the rest of the day, or 30 problems from Saxon math. And after that, just reading at your leisure, you know, being intellectually curious. They don't have to be in a regimented thing in front of a teacher. Teachers are the worst thing for learning. They really are. You teach your children how to self-teach, and they'll be, you know, they'll go as far as they want whenever they wanted to learn anything. Self-teaching is incredibly powerful. So you want to have an understimulated environment. You want to have absolutely zero screen time. There's no question. Oh, am I giving my kid too much screen time? Yeah, you are. If you're giving him any more than zero, it's too much. There's plenty to do in the real world, and screen time is a sickness. It's like poison for children. You might as well be giving your kid Marlboro cigarettes and beer or heroin as much as put him in front of a TV or a video game, as far as I'm concerned. In the house, it should be an understimulated environment, a quiet environment. They should be encouraged to do things like color in the coloring books, building models, three-dimensional things that require fine motor skills. Waldorf was big into knitting, but I think like building balsa model airplanes or plastic models is a really good activity. And self-teaching, when they're working out their math problems, you just give them only as much help as they need, and otherwise, let them work it out on their own. The cat lady in front of the blackboard is the worst. It's just so boring to listen to a teacher for hours on end. You don't really need that. We have books. The reason for a blackboard and a teacher was before the printing press. I mean, that's how outdated teaching is, in my opinion. I mean, in some cases, sure, it's good to sit in front of a philosophy professor. But I mean, first learning like arithmetic and geometry and algebra, you don't need to sit in front of a teacher, in front of a blackboard. You can just work that stuff out at a desk.
Well, one thing that you certainly can do is get a lot of this instruction for free. But of course, that you have to go online to get that.
Yes. Yep. Sure. Sure. And you can stop it whenever you want. When you zone out, you just hit pause.
Right. So there are things, I think there are lots of great things about the online world, right. To be perfectly honest.
Oh, absolutely. When I say screen time, I mean TV. But okay. YouTube video instruction, absolutely, that's great. I mean, I should qualify that. Yeah, of course. But and that's self-directed and it's active. You're not sitting there, you're not like manipulating a joystick watching Super Mario jump over things. You're actually like learning stuff.
Right.
So yeah. Yeah, YouTube isn't screen time.
Okay, well, that's a useful distinction.
That's like a rabbinical rule. Oy vey, we have to make an exception for YouTube instructional videos. Okay, so YouTube officially isn't screen time. Yahweh said so.
Okay, well, and Yahweh's bound by our decisions. So,
right.
Let me just the way I like to put it is. We should program ourselves rather than let other people program what we watch. So TV programming, radio programming is programming, and it's other people programming you. And we need to take our programming into our own hands, and that means that we go out when we have interests and questions and projects to do, and we do our own research. We find people who can educate us. We get information on our own. And the whole online world is very useful for that. So I would have been a much smarter, better educated kid if I had the internet when I was growing up, because I was constantly intellectually curious and I was limited by what I could get from libraries and from bookstores and from the four channels of TV that I had access to. So
I had a burning desire to be an electronics technician when I was like 10 years old. And I could have done it. I see this material. I could have done it.
Right.
And it was out there, but my parents didn't know about it.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So I do think that that is a revolution that gives us huge advantages.
Yes.
The whole online revolution. And also just the immense advances in computing and software that make it possible to create things that it took factories and hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars worth of capital and large staffs to create even 20 years ago. It's just a huge equalizer for us. And it allows us to compete with the major legacy media at this point. Which is a huge advantage.
Hey, I wanted to digress just a little bit regarding, leveraging the decline is like a theory, right? We're like, this looks like it's, I can't go into specifics, but I am experiencing my thesis that we're going to be able to conquer in the decline just because everyone else is failing. You know, I have experience in my life being able to take over, you know, to succeed because of the Idiocracy. And unfortunately, you know, someday the story will all come out, but right now it can't. But it's definitely true. It's definitely happening, and there's going to be more and more of it. And it's a lot of fun. You know, it's heartbreaking to see the world dumbed down until you realize it's an opportunity for you. So it's quite real.
Yeah, totally. One thing that is really indicative of just as an example of something I gave earlier, that's indicative of the revolution that computing and software has made possible. Have you ever heard of the Synclavier? The Synclavier is one of the early digital synthesizers. It was created in the late 70s, and it was from a company, I believe, based in called New England Digital in Vermont, actually. And I was thinking it was in Massachusetts. But New England Digital brought out this pioneer digital synthesizer. And, you know, the thing is was like the size of a refrigerator, right? And it just enormous and enormously expensive. I think in the early 80s, they were like $500,000 or something like that to buy one of them. And only movie studios and people like Frank Zappa, who had tons of money, could afford. Rock stars and movie studios were the only companies that really could afford them. Now you can do everything a Synclavier did with basically stuff you can download, pirated off the internet for free onto your laptop. It's just astonishing. It's astonishing how that's happened. And you know, when you think of the cost of animation studios and TV studios and things like that in the past and what people can do today, it really is astonishing. So if we can take full advantage of that, I think that gives us a certain advantage in the basically the struggle for domination over our society, because that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to become a, as I said before, white people with a future. And that means that we have to have edges. If we can figure out how to build in systematic advantages to the education that we give our kids and the educations that we pursue, then all we need to do is just, you know, work and repeat, and with time, those advantages are going to grow. You know, one thing that we talked about in the last conversation that we had, which unfortunately didn't record, is you talked about the Munchausen by proxy.
Right. Yeah, let's definitely talk about that.
Let's talk about that.
So the Great Society, before the Great Society, when a young lady got pregnant, she would go live with her aunt until she had the kid and give the kid up for adoption and then go back to society and, you know, and get married, assumed as a virgin, you know, go down the aisle in a white dress, right? And the whole, like, illegitimate child thing was kind of swept under the rug. And that was actually okay. I mean, they make it sound like that was a terrible thing. But now we have, you know, a young woman can get pregnant and get an apartment, get, you know, free money, and just live without and being answerable to any man. And this is monstrous because they can't really run a proper – they can't raise kids without the effectively, without the supervision of a man. You need the discipline of a mature, educated, you know, well, at least educated, at least a man understands – more than, you know, it's about more than just feeding them and entertaining them or whatever, that there's higher things that these kids got to do. And the women will just be like, well, as long as the kid is fed and clean, that's all that matters, and let the schools take care of everything else and put him in front of the TV. You know, so the single mom phenomenon led to Idiocracy. And the social services always wants to expand itself. It wants more money and it create more victims. And Munchausen by proxy is where, like, the mom will purposely make the kid sick. And social services encourages Munchausen by proxy because it says, well, if your kid is sick, you'll get Social Security disability. You'll get, you know, we'll raise money for the hospital for you, you know. You know, there's they a lot of people out there are quote unquote sick who aren't really. They just want social services, you know. And they want the rewards for being sick. I mean, social services incentivizes being sick, either physically or mentally or both. And so, you know, who wants to work? Work sucks. You know, better to stay home with your quote unquote disabled kid, right? And so that's Munchausen by proxy writ large. And it encourages Munchausen by proxy on the individual family level. You know, you'll have a mom who like, all my kids are special needs. You know, she has four kids. They're all special needs. And it's like, that's just about the Gibbs, man. That ain't real.
Right. Well, one thing that I think is a dynamic with bureaucracies, especially cat lady social worker type bureaucracies, is they want to create problems that they can solve.
Yes.
And so one of the things that they do is they redefine things that are reality, that are normal, as pathological. And I honestly believe that a great deal of ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, is just the what you'd expect from putting especially boys in boring female-dominated school environments. And instead of recognizing that this is actually, for the most part, a manifestation of health, they define this as a form of illness, and then they try and dope them up to make them compliant. And the thing is, though, that if you recognize that there are certain things that are perfectly normal and natural, that should be the standard, and institutions and education and so forth should basically cater to what's normal and natural. Whereas if they redefine these things as pathological, well, if they're pathological, if they're illnesses, then the system doesn't have to change. You've got to change. And fortunately, there's a drug here. Put your kid on speed. And it's astonishing the large numbers of people who are now diagnosed with disorders that didn't even exist 50 years ago.
Being energetic is a good thing. Yeah. If your kid is more energetic than seems like appropriate for you, take him out in sports. You know, get him tennis lessons, swimming lessons, horseback riding lessons. Gonna go on bicycle riding, go hiking. The energy is a good thing. You know, get that energy out. You got to kind of go with, in some sense, what they're doing, and you know, agree and amplify it. You know what I mean? I'm not saying like be undisciplined, but if the kid's got a bunch of energy in the every morning, then do something strenuous physical activity. That's all. You know, and work too. You know, work on a garden. You know, shovel snow when it snows. Whatever, any kinds of physical thing. If they have too much energy, then it's very healthy. I mean, people should do more physical stuff.
Right. There are three forms of education that I always sort of associated with, if you will, elite education. And I think it's something that we should consider making part of our culture, our subculture, if you will, because we want to be an elite. We want to give our kids an elite education. And those three things are chess, music, and languages. Do you think those are important things that people should work into their lives and their children's lives, especially if they're trying to educate their kids entirely through homeschooling?
Yeah, you know, I like chess, all right. I'm more into the math. It's kind of chess is like a flavor of math to me. So yeah, for what you're thinking of in chess is what I think of in math. And I would say, yeah, that chess and math. I mean, chess is one of the many flavors of mathematics, sure.
Well, and it's also strategic thinking. It teaches people to think about different possibilities, it teaches people how to strategize. It teaches people how to play games and how to win. And I do think that is certainly something that we should try and get to be second nature for our kids, because most most dumb people are impulsive. The future is a blank to dumb people, and they act on impulse, and they don't think about the likely consequences of this course of action or that course
right.
of action.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah, they don't think, well, if I do this, what are other people going to do to counter me, and so on and so forth. And so I think that if we're going to be smarter and more powerful as a community, building that kind of strategic thinking into our educations is really a great thing. Xenophon, in his Education of Cyrus, talks about the way that the Persians would educate the noble youths, the aristocracy. And it really is kind of brilliant the way he lays it out, because a lot of the things that people might think are just sort of aristocratic kind of hobbies and so forth that aren't really serious are actually very serious. So, for instance, and the ancient Persian aristocrats would live in these big estates in the country, surrounded by parks, basically. And they spent a lot of their time training dogs and horses and going hunting. And it's like, you see that today with the British aristocracy, right? They like to spend time around dogs and horses, and they like to hunt. And the rationale for that that Xenophon gave is that training dogs and horses is an analog for training human beings. So if you're training people to be a ruling class, you have to train them to rule. And you train them from a very young age by having them rule animals like dogs and horses. And then many of the same principles apply to ruling people. And then, since a warrior aristocracy has to make war, hunting is a great school for war, basically. And I thought that was really quite brilliant. And so his point is that games and hobbies can be highly, highly educational, and they don't necessarily even know they're being educated.
Right.
Right. And so a game like chess, which is quite entertaining, actually, is also very educational. I think playing music, learning how to play music, learning how to make your own music is very good for the mind.
Yes, especially the piano, because you got to do, your two hands got to be independent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so music is good because it's mentally stimulating. I think it also refines taste, and it makes you somewhat more self-sufficient when it comes to entertainment. And I think one of the worst things that the digital world does is inculcate passivity.
Yes. You know, absolutely.
We just passively absorb information from other people, like our listeners are passively absorbing it from us. Shame on you. what was the third thing? Language learning. My mother was a good mother, and unfortunately I was unworthy of her in some ways. But one of the things that she really wanted me to learn, and she went to the trouble of actually finding someone who could tutor me in it when I was in junior high school, was for foreign languages. She wanted me to learn Latin, for instance.
Oh, wow.
And there were no Latin teachers around. We found somebody, but I just didn't keep up with it.
Of the Jenny books, you can just teach it to yourself. You don't need a tutor.
Yeah. And I did take Spanish and French in high school, and then I went on and studied French and German and in the university. So that is a good thing, though, because it's, again, it's mentally stimulating. It really helps you learn grammar to learn foreign languages, because you don't have to learn English grammar to learn English if you learn it as a native speaker. But
right,
to learn another language when you're a teenager, you really need to learn grammatical concepts. I never understood English grammar until I actually was studying the grammar of French and German. Yeah, and then I learned the grammar of my own language. I also was a writing lab tutor, and I had to take a grammar course. But that was when I was in college. But yeah, it's it's good for the mind. And beyond that, it just makes you more able to converse with people and read literature and things like that in other languages. It gives you an edge. You know, it makes you more cosmopolitan in a good way.
Yeah, I learned Russian between the ages of 19 and 22, and I still speak it to this day, 26 years later.
Mm-hmm.
And my whole leveraging the decline idea came about as a result of going and living in Russia and seeing that Russian kids had a much stronger education. Like I saw a string ensemble of 10-year-olds that could have been they could have auditioned for an American urban orchestra and got in. They were really good at 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
The violin teacher over there, I took violin lessons. I mean, I stopped gave up violin in favor of math. But my violin teacher was a graduate of the Moscow Conservatory, and the kids, when she would teach them violin, they couldn't the first 3 years, they couldn't take the violin home with them, and they had about a half hour to an hour a day, 5 days a week, of her just instilling the correct form into them. They were never allowed for the first 3 years to do anything wrong. They had to, she would program them the correct biomechanics of playing violin.
Mm-hmm.
And so by the time they were 8 or 9 years old, they could practice, you know, with perfect Galamian technique. It was programmed into them like you program a computer. And then it was just a matter of teaching them, you know, the notes and the, and like the, in those 3 years, they had learned the stuff, like the different kind of bowings, the pits. What's the, I know pizzicato, I forget where you bounce the bow and all that different cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so, and by the time they're 10 or 11, they've pretty much got violin down. And then if they, the ones that auditioned before the Moscow Conservatory have to be so awesome, unbelievably awesome, that they would be the soloist in the, you know, in an American orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, and so learning Russian and going there gave me my big answer to life, namely that American kids have been shortchanged by television and public school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we're so dumbed down compared to Russians. The Russian kids have, and Russian and Chinese kids enjoy a much higher, more effective education. But I think we can actually do better than them, even with the homeschooling and self-teaching thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be our turn to leapfrog them, because they're still going in front of teachers and boards and, you know, sitting around bored all day like we are. It's just they're doing it more effectively.
Right.
They're doing a bad model more effectively than we are.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, public schooling in America being so bad as it is and forcing us to completely rethink it is going to turn out to be a good thing for us.
That's a good point. We should always take crises and obstacles and try and turn them into opportunities. That's how people win. And I think that that's a really good philosophy in this particular case. The fact that the public school system is such a failure actually is a huge opportunity for us. Because, again, the system can't work. We have a paradoxical situation where we have a high-tech society that requires highly educated and highly competent people to keep it going, and yet our educational system is in the hands of ideologues and cat ladies and coddlers and so forth, dumbers down, diversity mongers, etc., who are undermining the basis for the whole civilization. They are like termites hollowing out the foundations of our civilization by destroying our educational system. Well, there are really two possible outcomes of this. One is that they actually will destroy civilization, or two, that the next elite that runs our civilization will be people who do an end run around the termites, the existing educational system, and therefore become fit to actually keep the civilization going. And I think that that should be our strategy. That should be our hope, is to become the next ruling elite, and not yes. just a technocratic elite, but also intellectual and ultimately political. That's what we really are all about here in the end. We want to turn advantages in the economic realm and the technical realm into political change so we can give our people, all of our people, a future again. And also we can reform the educational system so it starts turning out better people rather than dumbed down and frustrated and tortured and deformed people, which is what we're getting today.
I think if we implement, they will willingly hand us power.
They will
just
or
because
they won't.
They will willingly hand us power because things will be so screwed up and we're clearly the only ones who can set it straight. You know, I think that at least on the local levels, you know, the central bankers might not want it, but
I think there are going to be people who are going to be quite unwilling to go along with that. They would rather crash civilization than see us running it rather than them. They would rather run it into the ground with them on top,
right,
than
right.
cede power and keep it going. And so we're going to have a fight. But the thing is that the stronger we are when that fight commences, the greater the chance we'll have of victory.
And, I mean, if they try anything, the best thing our enemies can do is nothing. Anything they actually try to do ends up working in our favor. Any kind of repression they do to us, like, at this point I'm laughing that they're still doing anything trying to save themselves. Banning Alex Jones, that's like, oh, thank you. That was a really good move for us. That was a great own goal. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
everything they do like that is... Yeah,
yeah, I agree. I think that they're looking weak and panicky. I mean, they've been looking quite mad, actually, for 3 years now. And... you know, you can't maintain that level of psychological intensity forever. Eventually, the organism just gives out. And I'm thinking that they're going to start giving out. They're going to start having strokes. You know, the pussy hats are going to be blasted off the top of their heads. You know,
their kids are going to go to our side.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So... one of the things that I have to give Donald Trump for is he just keeps triggering these people. And I think that if we, you know, one of the things that was great about 2016 and 2015 is that people in our movement were starting to control the news cycle. We were starting to inject memes into public discourse that they were responding to, instead of us just complaining about the latest stuff that they've done to us, right? And I would really like to get back into that more kind of proactive mindset that we had, where we're just constantly pummeling these people with new things that are constantly triggering them into new meltdowns and greater and greater levels of insanity and overreaction and so forth. I am glad that Identity Europa is doing a lot of events and banners and stickers and stuff like that. It is very, very triggering. And the more we can trigger them, the more we're going to wear them down. And
yes.
It's empowering to us. It makes us feel effective. And it's also just so much fun.
Absolutely. You know, and we got to have our first tech multimillionaire or billionaire who can, whenever a guy loses a job, you know, that tech millionaire can hire him. We got to be financially independent. We got to pick up our wounded, you know, the Red Scares and the McCarthyism. You think those guys who got fired from their Hollywood jobs, you know, ended up, you know, as stew bums under a bridge? No, they got taken care of.
Yeah, totally. And we will be in that position. So yeah, another way that we can formulate our goals is that in 10 or 15 years time, one of you people out there should be our first tech billionaire. Wouldn't
right.
that be nice?
Yes.
Think in those terms.
I'm trying to do it myself.
Great. Great.
So I mean, if you have that idea, get in touch. And if you want to homeschool, get in touch.
Right.
You know, if you want to teach yourself math, get in touch.
Right.
If you want to learn Russian, for that matter. I can teach Russian, but you know, you'll have to do a lot of your own effort. You know, it's right. A lot of I was teaching one guy for a while, but he wasn't really doing enough work on his end.
Yeah,
he wasn't doing it. I was assigning him homework. You know, he wasn't doing it. And it's like, okay, what am I giving him, this guy, an hour of my day for?
Right. Well, but, Rob, this has been really good. We've been going for about an hour, and yeah, I think we should wrap up here because I think we've given people a lot of food for thought, and I hope that some of them will start doing things. Actually, not just thinking, but doing things. So if somebody wants to, for instance, explore possible career options and training options in high tech or various trades and things like that, where there are lots of opportunities, where's the first place to go?
Yeah, like I said, the Cleveland Institute. You know, going into IT is good, but it's actually better to learn the electronics, learn it at the electron level first, mm-hmm, and work your way up into programming. Mm-hmm. And it'll be much more understandable. You know, C programming will be a lot more understandable if you've done discrete mathematics and probability and assembly programming, or, you know, mm-hmm, making circuits work, electric circuits work. So, right, like, the Cleveland Institute also has IT. It has, like, A+ and Network Plus, and that stuff is great. But I think the more fruitful path is the electronics technology. And they have robotics and automation. They have an electronics engineering associate's degree, which I think is worth getting no matter what, you know, after you do the electronics tech. And then I think I'm going to study wireless and cell phone tower technology, mm-hmm, you know, radio cell phone technology. Because that's just a thing. Everybody uses cell phones. You know, there's worries about fake cell phone towers that are taking your data, you know. So I want to learn the fundamentals of that stuff. And if you are afraid that it's going to be too difficult for you, then study math for a year or two, calculus, you know, algebra, geometry, calculus. And you get through calculus, then that stuff will be easy. You know, electronics will be easy. It'll not easy, but doable. You know. So, and you know, and with the way to do math is just spend it like the first thing in the morning. Give yourself about it, you know, like it's like a Buddhist meditation for me, just to study math or tech now. Mm-hmm. And you know, I do it first thing in the morning over coffee, and it really energizes me for my day. You know, energizes me to go exercise and work. I noticed that when I studied first year calculus, I was much better at my office job. It was like it was the real limitless pill. It made me smarter. You know. I love the movie Limitless, but you know, no athlete would expect to get really strong from a pill. I mean, that's like the Popeye fallacy. You know, Limitless right. is like an update of Popeye eating a spinach and beating up Brutus, mm-hmm. and that's a foul. You know, any athlete knows that Popeye's not real. That what's real is exercising. You know, day after day, month after month, year after year, and the same thing with your brain. You know, you don't pop a pill and suddenly become brilliant. You know, like Limitless, you got to exercise. You got to do math or chess or piano, you mm-hmm. know, day after day, year after year, and then you will get smarter. That's right. The real limitless pill is that brain exercise.
Well, Rob, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
We will continue. We'll do this again. We've been overcoming some of our own technological difficulties today. We've been doing a lot of testing of microphones and setup stuff so we can do this with better sound quality. So now that we've gone over that technological hump, we should definitely do this more often.
Yeah, and you know, now that I study electronics, I'm better at kind of figuring out these problems myself, you know, a little more persistent.
Great.
So thank you for having me, Greg, and you have a great day.
You too. Take care. Bye-bye.
Yep, bye-bye.